I take my loving on the rocks. Sip on it slowly, I don't rush this, ain't no shot. I like my man like a fine wine. I take my loving with someone who knows how to take his time.
Hey everybody, welcome to the 440 Guitar Podcast. I am your host today, Darrell Powell. Thank you so much for tuning up. You can catch the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anchor.fm/440. You can actually catch this on YouTube as well if you prefer to listen or watch there. And then be sure to follow the podcast as well on the Instagram, on our Instagram at the 440 Guitar Podcast to get updates on the episodes coming out. And if you have a question as well when it comes to just, if you have questions regarding to like the show or what have you, feel free to direct message me through Instagram, or you can send me an email at the 440 podcast at gmail.com. So feel free to do that. Today I'm very excited because I'm speaking with a very talented artist that I found out about, that I was connected with, and really happy to speak with here today. I'm going to read a description here. That says here in quote, this artist has an upcoming album of blues and ballads titled Love on the Rocks and is going to be out August 6th. The album finds her expounding on the soulful, seductive style that allows her to break down the boundaries between rock, blues, and classic R&B. Her trajectory has accelerated rapidly over the course of the past 7 years with the release of 3 EPs, Do and Hope, The Game, and Won't Stay Down, in her first full-length album, 2015's Truly Me. In the meantime, the accolades have kept coming. She has been named the 2015 Female Vocalist of the Year by the Midwest Music Awards, took a first place finish in the 2018 Wing Dang Doodle competition, and watched with pride as The Game became entrenched in the top 50 of the Billboard Blues charts in the past 5 weeks in a row. The 440 Guitar Podcast is very excited to have Lauren Anderson on the show.
Oh, wow. We've got applause. I feel like such a celebrity.
You're the first one with the applause here. So
what?
You should be proud. Yeah.
You know what? I don't think I'm going to be able to have a conversation without applause now. This might ruin conversations
you should.
For
you
me.
Deserve it. You deserve it.
Oh, thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Especially now, just because things are opening up. I can see people's faces again because they're all wearing masks.
I know. I've all these people that I met during the pandemic, I think I filled in what the bottom half of their face looked like. And then all of a sudden masks came off. I was like, wait a second. I had to relearn who people were. I didn't recognize anyone anymore.
Right.
Have you found that? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, I have. It's funny because my wife, she's the opposite, where we were at 7-Eleven and someone walked in. And she was like, oh, babe, that's that guy from that movie. I was like, how did you?
Yeah. How do you even know? Yeah.
How did you decipher that? So
it's crazy. Yeah, I know.
Obviously, this is definitely a huge win for artists and musicians able to, do live stuff again, record with people again. How does it feel given, of what everyone dealt with last year and versus this year?
Yeah, it's been really nice. I went on the first out of town run last week, and it was in Texas, which, so from Nashville, if you're just going to Texas, that's a long run. But I just, all I was so excited to just be on the road again and playing music, and I don't care if it's a 12-hour, 15-hour drive, just get me playing shows. It's been really nice to get back into things.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So the 440 Guitar Podcast is really big on origin stories, how people get to where they are today. So without further ado, the first question I like to ask all my guests, tell me about your earliest memories of music.
You know, I think that my parents aren't professional musicians, but there's just been, there was a lot of music in my family. My parents are an architect and interior designer, and then my grandparents, you know, played piano really well, you know, was in a barbershop quartet. Like, there was just a lot of music. And so, you know, and then just growing up, I feel like there was just, my dad would play a song to, you know, blast a song from the kitchen just to get us down to dinner, you know, like it was just a musical family. And so I don't ever have a memory not wanting to sing. I've always sang. And then, I have two brothers, and they are both phenomenal guitar players. You know, so we just, I like, in terms of a specific memory, I think probably the my dad playing, you know, music to get us down to dinner. You know, there was a couple specific songs he'd play. The "What I Like About You," "You Really Know How to Dance," and then he'd play this other song that was like kind of sad called "The Hangman." "Two hangmen hanging from a tree," which I don't know why he thought that was cool to play for his children, but we loved that song. And then I also have a lot of memories of, you know, like every summer we go to the lake for a week as a family. And I just remember these long car rides just going by so quickly, because my dad would just play his old records the whole time. And just like we listened to a lot of like rock operas and The Who, and like, I don't know, I just remember like listening to music was like a big, important part of my childhood.
Wow.
So
both parents were pretty just passionate about like music enthusiasts, or was it mainly your dad?
I think it was, you know, my mom also is a big music lover, but like, I think my dad was the one who kind of directed that ship a little bit more. My mom kind of like, she has her opinions, but like, you know, she's also just, she'll listen to a lot of different things. So, you know, she's less opinionated on what she wants to listen to, I think. I don't know. She's probably going to listen to this and be like, "Lauren, I have a lot of opinions." She's going to disagree with me probably. But sorry, Mom.
She's like, that's not even who I am.
She's like, "No, Lauren, call him up again and let's re-record this interview."
That's funny. Yeah. And then as far as, you know, when I hear your voice, you know, you have great voice, by the
Thank
way,
you.
Big fan. As far as like the, I feel a lot of, or I hear a lot of, inspired sounds from, you know, very famous, like soul, you know, soul R&B type of musicians.
Yeah.
Was your dad also a fan of that music? Is that how you connected to it?
To be honest, no. I mean, not that he's not a fan, but you know, I remember listening to more like classic rock. You know, when we'd go to on vacations, the stuff I remember listening to the most was like Phantom of the Opera, Jesus Christ Superstar, that rock opera, Tommy, Can You Hear Me? Like those kinds of things, and it was more like classic rock. And then I remember, I don't know if this is why. So, the first two CDs, which dates me, I know, the first two CDs I owned when I was a kid were Ace of Base, which I know is more like, what would you call them? Like 80s pop? I don't know.
Yeah, something
and
like,
then,
yeah.
And then it was like a top hits of the Pointer Sisters. So I think that probably had a big, like had a lot to do with it. But then I remember there was one day in particular that I was having like a really bad day. I was like in sixth grade or something. And I was talking to my mom, and she, you know, I was about to go to bed, and she's like, "Well, let's just, you know, just listen to music and just, you know, try to relax and go to sleep." And she turned on this like hip, like, I don't think she turned on anything specific, but it ended up being just like a hip hop station. And it was the first time that I like sat down, you know, I was like 11 or something, sat down and like really like listened to just like, I don't know, like rap, hip hop, like R&B music at length. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, because I don't think I even had a radio before then, in my room anyway. And so I feel like that just kind of like grew, I guess. I just, you know, all of a sudden I started listening to, like, I remember loving like Lauryn Hill when I was a kid, and then, like, you know, that turned into Whitney Houston, and then, you know, Kelly Clarkson was a big one, Etta James. Then I when I got older, found like Susan Tedeschi and Bonnie Raitt and all them. Just it kind of turned into any female who just commanded the stage and had like a big soulful voice, like, I was on board. Still to this day, that's kind of my theme.
Awesome. Very awesome. Yeah. So growing up, were you singing from a very early age as well, or did that come after?
No, I actually, side note, I was listening to Dolly Parton, online audiobook.
Yeah.
And they described her as singing ever since she stopped crying as a baby. And I was like, that is,
oh wow,
I can relate that. That's how it felt to me. Like, I always sang, you couldn't shut me up. You still really can't. And, to the point that actually, like, I have a podcast now as well, a music podcast, and it's called I've Got a Song for That. And that phrase came from when I was in preschool. I don't remember doing this, but when I was in preschool, like, you know, the teacher would be like telling all the kids like what we were going to do. And I would interrupt her on a regular basis and be like, oh, and she'd call on me and I'd be like, oh my God, I have a song for that. And I would just start making up a song. I would just start singing about whatever we're doing that day. I've always been singing.
Very cool. Very cool, man. And then just talking on like the musician side, cause I've seen you with a couple of different instruments when it comes to like guitar or piano. Like, when did that start for you?
Yeah. So I started playing piano when I was 8, and then I took lessons for piano through college. And then it was always classical piano. And then somebody showed me a lead sheet, and all of a sudden I became a lot better at piano when I didn't have to play note for note and I could play lead sheet. But then I had brothers who played and still play guitar, and it wasn't until my later in life, I think I was stubborn. I was like, everybody plays the guitar. And so in college, I wanted to learn another instrument and decided randomly to play the mandolin. I actually still own my mandolin. I don't know if you can see it over there. I am a terrible mandolin player. I haven't picked it up in a while. I should, but it wasn't until my senior year of college, I think I was like 21, that I finally started playing the guitar. And now I feel like I feel more comfortable playing that in public than I do piano at this point. That's kind of, I feel like my solid instrument after voice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you recall the first song that you've written that was your own?
Yes. Okay. Recall is a strong word for it, but I remember what it was about. I was 7, and it was about my toys coming to life when we left.
Oh wow!
I don't remember anything beyond that. I don't remember.
So Toy Story owes you some accolades, then.
Yeah, I mean, literally, they need to call a girl up and give me some royalties.
Randy Newman, you owe me.
Literally,
oh, you got a friend
come
in
on,
me,
Randy. God, that'd be nice, huh?
Oh man, that's funny.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, as far as this, you know, you writing and singing, it seems like it was a very natural thing for you.
Would you say so? I say I wrote my first song when I was 7, but like, I didn't write a ton. I maybe wrote like, I don't know, like at best 5 songs then, until I got out of college then. And that was, I was in grad school, and I was starting to play the guitar more. And I remember I went to grad school in Kansas City, and I got there a summer early, and I remember sitting down and be like, okay, like, let's really sit down and like start writing songs more. Like, before then I did it sparingly, I guess. So I don't know. It didn't feel supernatural, but it was always something I was interested in doing. But I mean, still to this day, I mean, I write a song and I'm like, man, is this a good song? Like, is anybody going to like this song other than me? But I think that, you know, I think that keeps you humble. You got to be constantly questioning what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah. I was curious too to talk about just kind of like maybe your first experience like performing live, because of course there's always you know, there's always like the music you make when like you're in your bedroom or whatnot, but then when you expose it to like a live audience, it's like a completely different monster. Do you remember that experience for you?
Yeah. So I actually, my first performance, side note, can you hear my puppy at all? He's chewing on a bone right now.
No.
Okay, good.
I wouldn't have known if you didn't tell me. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Well, shoot, I popped a bubble. Anyway, regardless, my first performances were in choir. I grew up in choir. Mm. And so, I mean, and I was in a community choir when I was eight, and I was in that choir till I graduated high school. And we were lucky enough to like travel with that choir. So like my first time going like to Europe was with that choir. And when when I was in eighth grade, we went to like Prague and Vienna. And then I think my sophomore year, we went to Paris. I mean, we got a chance to sing in Notre Dame. Mm. And so my first performances were with a choir, which was like, that's not exactly my type of music, but like it was kind of a nice way to get in front of an audience while having like the comfort of, you know, people with you and like, you know, peers. But then in terms of like other performances, I was in a bunch of a cappella groups in high school. Mm. And so I did a lot of performing with that. I was in like musical theater too, but listen, I am a terrible actress and and my voice is not made for musical theater, so I was never anything beyond the choir in that, but I did do a lot of a cappella groups. And I remember my first time, I think it was my first time soloing. Mm-hmm. I was a sophomore, so I was 16, and we sang the I Need a Hero. What is the name of that song? Anyway, it starts off with a, where have all the good men gone and where are all the gods? Mm-hmm. And I started the song off as 16 and was just like so terrified. But I got through it and here we are still doing it. So.
Yeah. Was that experience different when you performed music that was your own versus music that, you know, was that someone else already made?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that up until recently, when I was younger, I think I enjoyed performing other people's songs more because I didn't have a lot of confidence in my own stuff. You know, even like, you know, in my 20s, I feel like, you know, I just, you play somebody else's song and it's like time tested. Like, you know, people are going to like that song and know that song. And you play your own and it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit vulnerable. And not until probably recently, you know, the past 5 years or so, now I prefer my own songs. But I think I've found, you know, when I write, I write a lot of stuff that's just very personal. And I think that my favorite thing about sharing original music is that people will hear something intimate or like sensitive and think to themselves, man, I didn't know anybody else felt that way, you know, and take some comfort in knowing that they're not alone in whatever we're talking about in this song. And so I, you know, I only just recently kind of started to find confidence in doing that. Mm. And by recently, I mean, like, you know, since I've been kind of putting out my albums, I feel like that's kind of when it started. But now I definitely, I don't know. I guess it depends on the song and it depends on the mood. It depends on the crowd, you know, I don't know if I answered your question, but
no, you did. Yeah, okay. You did. Yeah. Yeah. No. Cause I definitely see what you mean when it comes to when you perform something that is your own work, there is a vulnerability there too. Right. You know, cause a lot of, I've spoken to a couple of my friends that are artists or just other artists when it comes to like, you know, playing covers and how important is that to them, and then
right.
you know, putting out those originals, because it's like, well, mainly people are there for, you know, kind of how you sound, but then also like for the covers as well.
Yeah.
At least in that starting thing, and then after you do five covers, oh, let me give them one original and see how they feel, you know, see how they yeah. respond to it, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Very yeah, I think that's kind of how it starts. And then now I feel like most of my sets are like mostly originals with like a few covers, you know. I think that that's just kind of how it, you know, how it, but also to that point too, I was, you know, before I started really like performing my own stuff, I was in a bunch of cover bands. And I remember having this moment where I was like on vacation learning a Christina Aguilera song. And as much as I love her, I was like, what am I doing? Like, this is not, I don't want to be in a cover band. I want to be an artist, you know? Right. And so, you know, when you kind of decide what you want your music career to look like, I mean, it might be scary sharing. Sorry.
No worries.
Billy is having, he's got some things to say, but it might be scary sharing your original music, but you know, I the more you do it, the stronger that muscle gets.
Definitely. I want to talk a little bit about your album here, but I wanted to play a little bit, a snippet here from Back to Chicago, because I'm a big fan of this song too, listening to
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Of course. I think people definitely need to hear this whole album, but definitely this song. Let me play this and then we'll talk a little bit about your album here.
Wait.
On a cloudy day, and not one word did you even say. You walked out on me and mine, and all you left was wasted time.
So tell me about this album as far as For Love on the Rocks. Really solid project. Just when I was listening to it, there really isn't a song that I would skip to listen to one song that I would prefer more. It's really well done.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's like the best compliment.
No problem. Yeah, it's funny. I joined in on a music review podcast. I ended up listening to a lot of new music and giving critiques and whatnot, but I was listening to this. I was like, oh man, like this it flows very well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's such an important thing. So when it comes to just like, just from, I guess more of just from a general sense, you know, tell me a little bit about Love on the Rocks and just in general of working on the record and you know, and how you feel about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. I, you know, it's my sophomore album. Mm. And you know, so I've, you know, every album you put out, you know a little bit more about what you're doing. You know, so that's been a nice feeling. But I, most of these songs, you know, when the pandemic hit, you know, everything was shut down, and I, you know, I had like 30 dates, travel dates, just in April and May alone that, you know, I had to get canceled. And, yeah. And so, you know, I had all this pent up energy from not being able to tour. So I made a point when everything first shut down to write a song a day. And I did that for a couple of weeks. So I ended up with like, you know, 20, 30 songs in the pandemic. So, which was nice because then that allowed me to like pick and choose, you know, which ones are worth showing. Most of them were terrible, but you know, you gotta get to the good ones. You gotta get the bad ones out to get to the good ones.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I was able to sit down and say to myself, I want to put an album, I was really able to like hone in on like what the best ones, like what do I think people need to hear? So, that was kind of a nice process.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So most of them I wrote during the pandemic, a couple of them, I wrote before, I think maybe two of them I wrote before, that was Keep On, which is an acapella, like old school, like gospel-y tune. And
can I ask you about that for a second?
Yeah.
I think it's a really powerful start to the album, but what inspired that to be the beginning of the project? Because I felt like it was disconnected, but it was still connected.
Yeah. So I honestly, the biggest reason I added that, to be perfectly honest, I added it to the beginning was because my publicist suggested it. What's up, Patty? But I love the idea though. So that song was one of the ones I wrote a year before. I wrote it because I was auditioning for the blues music International Blues Challenge. And, I'm a big fan of, do you ever listen to Ruthie Foster?
Oh man, you're teaching me here, so I don't think I have. Yeah,
she's a really great blues artist, mm-hmm. and she has a version of "People Grin in Your Face" by Sun House.
I love that song. Yeah,
and it's a great song, and she does a really great cover of it, and I had been covering it, and I just wanted a song that was original that kind of had that spirit, and so I sat down and I wrote "Keep On." And then the fun thing about that was that when everything was shut down, I spent a day just in my room, just like, you know, layering layer on layer on layer of harmonies. And then, you know, my roommate and I walked around and found sounds that we could add as the beat. So like, it's literally a pandemic recorded song, which was kind of fun. And so I thought that it was kind of fitting to have, you know, when Patty mentioned, hey, you should start the album with that. I was like, yeah. Let's do it.
It's almost a pandemic theme song too.
I know. No, exactly. Exactly. And actually I have a music video for that one that is literally pandemic scenes. I went around a year ago when everything was shut down and empty and have a bunch of just like scenes of empty cities and like empty parking lots and all that stuff. So, so yeah, there's a fitting related music video as well.
Wow. Might have to play a few seconds of that. I just feel
please,
like
yeah.
just, I think it's just definitely something people should hear.
Yeah, thank you.
You got trouble on your mind. You got trouble on your mind. You got trouble on your mind. Well, keep on, yeah. Well, keep on, yeah. You got miles under your feet. You got miles under your feet. You got miles under your feet.
Can you tell me a little bit about the, as far as for the band that you worked with making this album, some really talented artists. Can you talk a little bit about them working on the record? Cause there's some really good, guitar work and the bass player just burning.
He's a beast.
You know,
he's like, a beast. I mean, if anything, he has to like pull back because he's just so good. Mm. So on the guitar, we've got Hutch on bass. Mm. We've got Jimmy Green on the guitar. I've got Matt Doctor on drums. Mm. I've got Kieran Gupta on organ and keys. Mm. And then John and Liz Estes are on, it's like this couple that, laid down there's a couple of tunes with violin and cello. Mm. And then I think there's a couple like extra padding things that my engineer Taylor Leonardo added on, you know, and I was really lucky, you know, the whole album's self-produced and band produced because like really what happened is, you know, I brought a bunch of acoustic tunes to this band and said, let's play through them and see what happens, you know? And so they all kind of put their own personalities on them. And then we kind of just discussed a little bit, like, you know, I had a lot of ideas going into it, but then they just always bring it to the next level, you know? And then, in addition to that, my engineer Taylor is just, he's just such a chill dude to record with. And then also has just like a lot of really killer ideas. I just was really lucky. I had a really great team to work on this, this album with.
Awesome. Yeah. It sounded like everyone really gelled well, just like working on the record, like even just like hearing from an instrumentation perspective. Like I remember the drummer on one of the songs, he kind of just had like a really cool Rickett thing that he did. And I was like, oh, he's having fun.
Oh yeah.
I was like, yeah, like everyone really had fun making this.
Everybody did. And I think that that's like, I mean, part of it was that we recorded this at the end of 2020, early 2021. And so like everybody was just excited to be playing, you know, at that point, like people weren't regularly playing, but then like, I'm a really big believer in like, you know, we go in knowing what we're going to do. We've got maybe one rehearsal on, but like, I love the magic that happens on songs when you're not like going in ready to play note for note. Right. You know what I mean? Like, right. I love just like the personalities that people bring to the music. And, you know, I always kind of wonder, like, should I be finding a producer? You know, I'm not opposed to working with a producer, but I've just been so happy with the friends and like musician people I found here in Nashville that I just have really, I enjoy going in there and just kind of like letting the music breathe. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I heard that some of the beauties in Nashville is where you work with people you've known for so long and just the music is just so great, you know?
Yeah.
So.
It's absolutely true.
Nice. What can you talk about a song maybe that was either the most difficult or challenging to work on, but pulled it off and sounded great?
A couple of them had some interesting challenges. The song "I'm Done" in particular, we got into the studio and we're like, we need to kick this up a notch, and it's so fast. It's just like this high energy funk tune that's just like. Just everybody fingers were on fire after it, but
break after that one.
Like, oh yeah, 100. Everybody was like, "I need to sleep for 12 hours after the song." Yeah, we were like, "How are we gonna do this live?" I don't know. but the one that was really surprising in like a really great way was the title track Love on the Rock. So that's also the only co-write on it. I originally randomly came up with the chorus and then just was like stuck. This was like a year and a half ago. I was like, I don't know what else to do with this. So I brought it to a couple friends of mine here in town, Sandy Ramos and Lorraine Flynn Smith. And, and they were like, I went into it with like a couple ideas and like showed them that, just being like, I don't know about it. Like, I don't know, and maybe whatever. And they like listened to it and they're like, we have to write this song. So they helped me finish the song. And then I still didn't really know, like, you know, whenever I played it just on my own, it still just didn't feel like I figured out where it needed to go yet. I view songs like living entities, and I really believe that like songs talk to you, and they kind of tell you which direction they want to go. And they tell you when you're going in the wrong direction. And I think that like, when it comes to songwriting, it's just a matter of figuring out how to like open yourself up to listening. And so I just hadn't figured out what to do with the song yet, but I decided to take it to the band, and the way things worked out, we didn't even have a chance to like rehearse with it. But, you know, I sent them it was just me and a piano, a recording. And so we went into the studio just like cold, like we'd not ever played it together. We had an idea of a direction we wanted to go with it, but we were like, what the hell? Like, let's just see what happens. And as soon as we started playing that, I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
You absolutely can.
Okay. I was like, I've been like trying to restrain myself because I hadn't heard you swear. And I was like,
no, it's welcomed. It's absolutely welcome. Okay.
No, as soon as we played the song, I was like, holy shit, that's the title track right there. Awesome. And it's now suddenly like my favorite tune. And it's the title track. It's one that I love. Finally figured out how to play it solo, when I'm playing like a writer's round. And the really exciting thing is that I was able to find a sponsorship with a local distillery, Guidance Whiskey. They're like a local black owned distillery, which is also like, there needs to be more Black-owned distilleries. I don't know why there aren't more of them. Yeah. So I found this distillery. They've got insanely good whiskey, you know, and I met with the owner, Jason. We made a little music video on it. And so they're kind of a supporter of the album. And then I get to support them too in the process, which is, so that's been a really fun, fun part of releasing that song. So I'm excited about that.
Awesome. That's phenomenal. I guess one of the last questions I had, what is the, this might be a big question, but what does the album mean to you? If you were to briefly describe it?
That's a great question. You know, I think it can mean a lot of different things, but I think that, I don't know. I mean, like if I were just to put a quick description on it, it probably would be the many faces of love in a pandemic, because I think that all of them kind of could relate to the various emotions we had when we were in lockdown, you know, like there's a song about drinking whiskey. There's a song about like, keep on, there's a song about, just being done with, you know, with everything that, and just wanting to quit. And, you know, I think that that's probably the quickest answer, but, I don't know. I think on a bigger level, it's also, the first time that I am able to, like I said, pick and choose songs that really mean something to me. But also songs that kind of have an overarching theme. I think past releases have had a little bit of like, like my first album in 2015, like was just all over the board with genres. And it's been kind of nice to be putting together a project that makes a little bit more sense to put together, you know, and I can, you know, succinctly say this is a blues Americana album versus, there's a little bit of everything on there.
Right. You hear that? You're like, okay.
You're like, all right, I'm buckling in. Okay.
Very cool. Very cool. And then the last thing, is, you know, since, you know, things are starting to open up, I'm assuming there's more going to be some more tour dates that people should keep an eye on, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So I'm still in the process of getting it back to where it was before everything shut down. But if people want to keep up to date, laurenandersonmusic.com is probably the best way. I post everything on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff too. And, you know, bands in town, I'll keep that updated. I've got a little Midwest run. I don't know when this episode will be released, but I've got a little Midwest run in mid-July. I've got another East Coast run in August. Got a couple Florida dates in September, and I think I'm looking at adding a couple more Texas ones then too, in the fall sometime. But slowly getting back onto the road. It's been nice.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to those dates releasing here in the future. Lauren Anderson, it's been a great pleasure speaking with you here on the show.
Thank you so much for being
here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks. Sorry. Thanks for putting up with my puppy. speaking of which. thank you for having me.
Of course. Not a problem. I'm going to close this out here with one of your songs. Until then, everyone, that's going to wrap it up here for the 440 Guitar Podcast. I am your host once again, Darrell Powell. We will jam again soon and have a great day.
At this highway speed, haven't eaten in some time, had my share of wine. Right now, it's just what I need. 'Cause my whole body aches, and I'm trying to find the point of it. Maybe this will numb my pain, and I'm feeling deserted. 'Cause one